Thanks for tuning in to Organic Matters. For this part of the show, it's actually a show I did about a year ago, but I was going to redo it, literally, and the information is basically so current, it's almost surprising. So even though you might hear the dates a little bit changed from what they are, the whole concept is surprisingly current for this, the first month of the new year, 2022. So I hope you enjoy it. Well, good morning, and thanks for tuning into Organic Matters here 9 to 10 every Saturday morning. Again, we mostly do these away from the studio these days because of the COVID situation, but it's up to date as it can be within sometimes as few as a few hours to not more than the 24-hour period. I'm going to start out with a couple of my, I call them Organic Matters factoids. The first one's about Superfund sites, but I'll have to give a little explanation. Some people I don't know realize there's a couple hundred, about 300 actually around the nation, that are so poisonous and so dangerous that they call them Superfunds, and we're supposed to be putting money together to eliminate them, make them sterile, make them neutral. But in the meantime, because of such an increase in fire ratios and other things that are going on, the wildfires and the Superfunds are getting mixed up and going to cause some real trouble if we're not careful. Thousands of contaminated sites exist nationally due to hazardous wastes being dumped, left out in the open, or otherwise improperly managed. These sites include manufacturing facilities, processing plants, landfills, and even mining sites. A congressional act way back in 1980 did establish authority by the Environmental Protection Agency to ultimately clean up these quote-unquote Superfund sites. Incidentally, just to throw in a little knowledge here, a number of these were left by real businesses that were in for profit. Yet when they walk away from it, they left all their garbage, they left all their poison, they left everything behind and didn't have to do anything about it. There were no laws making that happen, and we've now recently even made some of those laws no longer available. Folks, when they make a profit on us, and they make a profit and they're in the business to make a living, they also have to pay the expenses of making that business function, and we're just not making them do it anymore. So all of us worldwide suffer for that. According to government surveys that last year, and this even surprised me, 945 Superfund sites are vulnerable to hurricanes, flooding, sea level rise, increased precipitation, and importantly, wildfires, all of which are intensifying, of course, as the climate changes. In particular, there's about 245 sites, those are the ones I was aware of, vulnerable to wildfires. 68 of them have recently seen wildfires either on them or approaching them. A comprehensive investigation by Inside Climate News, NBC News, and the Texas Observer has found that the threat presented by wildfires is exceeding the authorities' ability to adequately prepare and to respond to them. Fires at Superfund sites would release toxins ranging from acid mine drainage to stuff as serious as radioactive smoke. There have already been a number of close calls. The 2013 Patch Springs fire near Salt Lake City, Utah, came within about 10 miles of the Thule Army Depot, a Superfund site with over 900 ammunition bunkers, along with soil and groundwater contaminated with various hazardous chemicals. The 2018 car fire in Northern California overswept the Iron Mountain Mine Superfund site and threatened to release corrosive chemicals into the entire watershed in that area. For sites where no polluter can be made to pay and the EPA lacks cleanup funds, the agency will need to design protections that shield the sites from wildfires as long as that contamination remains there. The best way to handle this would be to make these giant petroleum companies and chemical companies have a fund put aside that would equal what at least the best estimate would be to clean that area up after they're through with whatever they're doing with it. In the past, that just hasn't happened. You and I suffer for it. Your kids suffer for it. Your lungs suffer for it. And they don't care. They move on to the next site. That cannot continue as we approach 7.8 billion of us to take care of on this little speck we call Earth. And yet these big companies, especially in the last 4 or 5 years, have gotten excuse after excuse for not putting money out. They don't have to pay anything because nobody forces them to do it. So I think it's time that they carry their fair share. Now let's talk a couple of minutes about something that's been really close to me. For those of you who've been listening here or somewhere, I've been on over 20 years now. My background was originally as a herpetologist, mostly in turtles and tortoises. But probably the biggest field I worked in were in trying to protect sea turtles. While studying the sea turtles, we did discover some stuff that we were totally unaware of. One of them is the effects of climate change on the entire sea turtle population. Basically, when we're talking about marine turtles, sea turtles, they're born male or female, it turns out, totally dependent on the temperature of their nest during the incubation of their eggs. The studies show that the nests need to be around 84.6 degrees Fahrenheit on average. If so, they will produce roughly a 50-50 sex ratio of embryos developing into eggs. If temperatures are higher, embryos predominantly become female. There's a transitional range of temperatures over which both males and females are produced. Below that range, however, only males are produced. Above that range, only females are produced. Something that I never would have comprehended. I always didn't know. That science wasn't around when I was a biology major. According to recent research published in the journal Conservation Science and Practice, sand temperatures along the Red Sea, for instance, exceeded the 84.6 degree threshold in all but one of the sites that were studied. Some sites measured nearly 96 degrees. The Red Sea region is home to 5 of the 7 world species of sea turtles, including the endangered green turtles and the critically endangered hawksbill turtles. Skewing the sex distribution of a species is a very serious threat to the future and survival of their populations. Unfortunately, the Red Sea findings are very similar to observations around the world. In Florida, sea turtle hatchlings were born 100% female in 7 out of the past 10 years, and in the other 3 years, males only made up about 10 to 20% of the brood. In Australia's Rane Island, the largest sea turtle nesting ground in the Pacific Ocean, the ratio of female to male turtle hatchlings in 2018 was 116 females to every single male. Sea turtles, as we know them, have been around since the late Triassic period and have adapted to previous climate shifts, although it took an awful long time. But the rapid pace of human-driven climate change is threatening the future survival of these creatures all over the world. Although the sea turtles are indicative of basically what's going on with individual populations, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of animals we haven't even looked into yet. Some of them that are very, very, very prominent in science right now are all of the amphibians. We may be losing 70% of all the frogs on Earth in the next 20 years, and we don't know how many salamanders and other what we would call lower forms of vertebrates. So this is just the tip of the iceberg, if you pardon the pun, for what's going on with our animals. And yes, we have caused the climate problem. Can we fix it? Now, sort of for my environmental news for the week, very new news, I would say. This past week, there were sale of drilling leases in the Arctic Refuge. The administration put them on kind of an emergency sale for the sake of the petroleum industry, actually. But just half of the 22 available tracts of the entire Arctic National Wildlife Refuge got bids, and big oil companies didn't even bid on one of them. In an unexpected blow to the Trump administration's effort to open the Arctic Wildlife Refuge to fossil fuel development, only half of the oil and gas leases offered for sale Wednesday of this past week received bids at all, and all but two of these came from the state of Alaska itself. Just two companies, not big ones neither, little small oil companies, made bids to acquire 10-year rights to explore and drill for oil on tracts totaling about 75,000 acres. A state-owned economic development corporation offering a minimum of $25 an acre, though, was the sole bidder on all the other tracts, totaling about 500,000 acres. The right to another 400,000 acres we might nobody even put a bid on. So most of it is going to be protected in spite of trying to get the petroleum people in there to abuse it. The idea to, ruin or at least abuse that land was sold as a potential windfall that could bring in billions of dollars to the federal treasury. In all, the sale netted less. Remember, it was supposed to bring in billions. It brought in $15 million, with half of that going to the state of Alaska straight away. The bad news is the other monies the federal treasury would have taken in are not earmarked. Who knows what they would have done with them, but it doesn't matter. It fell through, and it should have. If we want to put that kind of emphasis on energy, let's put it on solar. Let's put it on wind, which we're very successful at. One of the most successful states in the nation now with wind power is right here in our state of Texas. At this moment, wind power per kilowatt is cheaper than coal and beginning to approach the cost of natural gas, which is much cleaner anyway. If you're going to go to any other fossil fuel at this moment, we should be converting everything we can to natural gas, eventually into solar power or battery power, electric-driven cars. I don't know if you're aware that in an odd happening a year or so ago, so I'm not sure how far it's come, Walmart tied in with, of all people, Amazon, two giants. I'm not big on giant companies, but what they did do is between them committed to several thousand, I think it was like 10,000, 18-wheel trucks that are going to be all electric. They're going to go over 500 miles of charge. They're going to be used to use intercommunications among the states. And the reason they had to get together is neither one could afford the number it took to make the factory profitable enough so that Tesla and them would get involved. I'm not sure who all owns part of it. But anyway, they committed to that many trucks. So by the year 2025, they're basically, they're at least intrastate, trucks will all become electric over time. Now, that won't happen overnight, and neither, I do have to say, you guys, everybody thinks, you're anti-fossil fuel. No, I'm anti-stupid. Okay, there is a limited amount of fossil fuel, whether it's now or 100 years away. It is dirty. It is expensive. We now can do solar and wind cheaper. The people that are in the solar and wind business are rapidly becoming much larger employers than the entire petroleum industry. If you don't believe it, give it a look. So that's just kind of a little throw I won't give you. That this was supposed to open up 19 million acres of our sacred property to people to drill and to abuse, and it's just not going to happen because the demand is just not as big as it used to be. So anyway, that's my, 2 minutes? 2 minutes of as close to politics as I want to get. Be back after this with more of Organic Matters.